This is Women's Magazine, and I'm Rivian Berlin. On the telephone with me is Yifat Susskind, Policy and Communications Director of MADRE. MADRE is a 27-year-old international women's human rights organization. It partners with women's community-based organizations all over the world to address issues of health, economic development, education, and other human rights for women. Thank you for coming on Women's Magazine, Yifat.
Thanks for having me.
MADRE has been working in Haiti for some time now, correct?
Right. We started working in Haiti in the early 90s when there was a U.S.-backed coup against the first democratically elected government in that country. And women's organizations, grassroots organizations of all kinds, were really at the heart of that pro-democracy movement. And MADRE was partnering with women who had survived rapes that were systematically organized by opponents of the democratic government at the time. And we've really worked in support of women at the community level in Haiti since that time.
Since the earthquake hit, I understand that the kind of work that you're doing now is to assist women who have been impacted by this disaster. Can you tell me what kind of relief you are providing at the moment for women?
Sure. I mean, we sort of swung into action, you know, the night that the earthquake happened, and organized an emergency shipment of medicines, antibiotics, bandages, you know, really sort of things that first responders would need in hand. And that's been, you know, up until now, really the focus. I mean, as all of us know who've been watching this unfold, there's just an incredible need because of the staggering numbers of injuries that people have sustained. So we've been doing that, and while a lot of the very big aid operations have been really hampered by a combination of, you know, bureaucracy and the U.S. military getting in their way, we were able to just, you know, drive truckloads of medicines and emergency supplies over the border from the Dominican Republic and get them into the hands of a very wonderful community-based Haitian health initiative that's founded by Partners in Health, which is a group based here in the U.S. It's called Zami La Santé. We've worked with them for a long time. And, you know, these are Haitians. Fortunately, the main facility is outside of Port-au-Prince, so it wasn't damaged, and they were able to, you know, rush to Port-au-Prince with supplies that we helped equip them with and immediately, you know, start setting up field hospitals and working with injured people, doing the gamut, you know, triage and surgeries and everything in between. So for the first many days, that was really our focus. Mm-hmm. And we've branched out to a few other initiatives in response to what Haitian women have identified as, you know, tremendous needs.
I understand you have your own model of disaster relief, and it's based upon your observations and others that disasters impact women very differently than men.
Right. You know, it's something that if we stop to think about it, it really does make sense. You know, women and men play different roles in families and communities, and women overwhelmingly are responsible, not just in Haiti, of course, but everywhere, for meeting the very basic needs of everybody in the population, but especially the people who are the most vulnerable when a disaster happens. It's women who are the main caretakers of, you know, children and babies and sick and disabled people and the elderly. And so they're really critical first responders. You know, on the household level, on the community level, you know, people are turning to women for comfort, for first aid, for, you know, care of all kinds. And so it's really crucial to recognize that leadership role that women are playing at the family and community level and to equip them with what they need to do their job, which is to provide care for people.
So how would you characterize the way you go about providing disaster relief to women and maybe some of the other larger international organizations that may not have this particular gender focus?
Well, I think the main thing that distinguishes MADRE is that we are not, you know, sort of swooping into a community at the moment of a crisis, delivering aid and leaving, which is the model of a lot of, you know, large international aid agencies. We're really there for the long term. I mean, we've been in Haiti since the early 1990s. It's clear we're going to be there for a long time to come, partnering with Haitian women as they heal, as they rebuild. And that's how we work every place. You know, we are a human rights organization in our main identity. We're not a relief agency, and we wind up doing a lot of relief work when disasters happen in the communities that we're working because we are partnering with local women's organizations, and, you know, when a catastrophe strikes their community, that's what they're responding to.
In addition to some of the medical supplies, what else are you doing in Haiti right at the moment?
Well, we have two other primary initiatives. One is that we worked with an organization based in the U.S. called Circle of Health International, which is a women's health organization that responds to women's reproductive health needs in places where there's conflict and crisis. And we worked with them to send an emergency delegation of Creole-speaking midwives and nurses to Haiti. And they've been, you know, they sort of hit the ground running. You know, we raised money to help them be able to go and to equip them with supplies, and they've really been doing an unbelievable job. I mean, they have been working, as have so many people in Haiti right now, you know, literally around the clock. And they've been doing all kinds of emergency health care for people, but because they are, you know, midwives and have training in reproductive health care, they're really able to meet the needs of Haitian women. The United Nations is estimating that there's about 63,000 women who are pregnant and likely to deliver, you know, in the next couple of weeks under obviously very devastating conditions. Haiti was not a safe place to give birth even before this earthquake happened. It's a place that, you know, more women die in childbirth in Haiti than any other country in this hemisphere. And that's part of, you know, the whole range of conditions that are totally preventable that Haitians have been contending with for many years. So, you know, in a place where women are already made vulnerable by poverty, it's really, really crucial right now to address reproductive health needs that aren't necessarily the priority of some of the other big aid agencies.
You mentioned a second initiative?
Yes, we're also partnering with another sort of longtime ally, something called the Feminist International Radio Endeavor, which is the first international internet radio created by women in Latin America and the Caribbean. They are in Haiti right now. They've set up a Feminist International Solidarity Camp, which is a really wonderful initiative. They're doing emergency health care, as is, you know, everyone who's on the ground right now. But they're also working with women to help mobilize and transfer resources and to open channels of communication directly with Haitian women, which, you know, it's not something that we necessarily think about. Mm-hmm. But one thing that's really, really crucial to people who are caught in a crisis like this is to know that people are hearing their stories, that people know what's going on, that they're not, you know, sort of forgotten and forsaken by the outside world. Because for them, they're very cut off. Mm-hmm. And so we've set up this communication channel so that Haitian women can tell their stories. And part of that includes a focus on human rights defenders in Haiti, so that we have a mechanism to monitor and to demand legal action for human rights violations that, you know, may be happening in the context of the relief and recovery efforts.
You know, I understand that Madre also is interested in economic development. And related to that, I'd like to know what you have to say about the role of the U.S. and other countries in the ongoing recovery and future reconstruction of Haiti. For example, do you worry about various countries and companies taking advantage of the disaster and exploiting Haiti in a way that's sort of described by Naomi Klein in her book, Shock Doctrine?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, as Naomi's pointed out, that we've seen that, you know, from day one, and we always see that. You know, one of the benefits, I think, of the work that Naomi Klein has done is to really alert people to that and kind of give it a name, this phenomenon that's been going on for so very long of, you know, people with a corporate economic agenda coming into a crisis and kind of, you know, remaking the landscape to suit their interests. So it's absolutely a concern. The good news is that I think people are sort of more savvy about it and able to identify it in the early stages. And there have already been a number of, I think, important victories on that count. One thing that I'm thinking of in particular is the fact that, you know, the week after the earthquake, the IMF very magnanimously came forward and said that they were willing to offer Haiti a loan of $100 million to help in the recovery efforts. Now, people who know about Haiti understand that a lot of the misery that people are contending with there has to do with the fact that the country is horribly indebted to international financial institutions, the IMF, the International Development Bank, and others. And so it was really like an incredibly selfish move on the part of the IMF. The organization Jubilee and numerous other economic justice organizations got together and mounted, you know, a sort of public campaign to sort of shame the IMF about coming forward with this offer of a loan. And the IMF responded by changing the terms of their offer and saying, oh, no, it's not a loan, it's a grant, which is exactly what big organizations need to be doing right now. Mm-hmm. And it was really, to my mind, very telling that pressure at this moment when, you know, ordinary individual people are focused on Haiti out of a sense of empathy and compassion and really want to find ways to stand with Haiti. And when the IMF came forward offering this loan, people really, you know, used that power of calling them out and got them to change their terms. There may be more defeats than victories along the way of trying to make sure that Haiti is rebuilt in compliance with, you know, human rights standards. But I think that shows that when people are, you know, can spring into action quickly and coordinate a campaign, it can be really effective.
Can I ask you a little bit about yourself, Yifat? How did you come into this work?
You know, I've worked at Madre for a long time. I've been there for more than 10 years, which, you know, in our economy is a long time to be in any one job. And I've been with Madre because I really love the organization. I think they've really figured out a way to respond and to work in partnership with people around the world. I'm originally from Israel, and I spent a long time working in peace and justice organizations in Israel. And when I came to New York, I really kind of was able to put that experience in Israel and Palestine into a context, thanks to Madre, and to see that, you know, it's not just in Israel and the occupied territories where women and progressive people are kind of working together towards a shared vision, even across lines of terrible conflict, but that exists in all kinds of places in the world, and that if we can, you know, kind of pool the benefits of the courage and the strategies and the stories from all these different contexts where people are really working with a vision of human rights, you know, it's a source of tremendous power for people who are doing that work.
What's your understanding of how, I know there's some lip service paid to the role of women, but what's your understanding of how deep it goes within various organizations and institutions?
Well, you know, it varies tremendously. I think that organizations that have a model of working in partnership with communities have a tremendous advantage in that the people who are most directly impacted by a crisis are the ones who really hold the expertise. And, you know, they're usually not the people who have the resources to address what they need, but they know what they need. And so organizations that recognize that and really partner with people in communities to provide those resources and to, you know, equip people with the kind of, you know, whether it's skills training or technical assistance or whatever else people need to be able to play meaningful roles at all kinds of levels. You know, sometimes that's about working in a community where women traditionally are forbidden to speak in public, let's say, which is a lot more places than we'd like to think, and moving from that situation to women, you know, running and winning elected office at the local level. I mean, that's just a tremendous victory, and we're seeing that in a lot of places, in particular in South America right now, where the indigenous movement has done incredible work gaining access to power at the state level, and it's really transformed people's lives at the community level in many ways. That's an initiative that we've been part of in Bolivia, for example. There are, you know, a number of organizations. I mentioned Partners in Health and Circle of Health International. Those are two based in the U.S. who we partner with, who I think really have a deep understanding of that. Some of the very large aid agencies and USAID, as you say, it's sort of at the point of lip service. And, you know, I think we often set aside the importance of big agencies like that giving lip service to an issue like gender, for example. But it's actually, I think, an important marker along the way of making progress. Because I'll tell you that there was a time when they didn't give lip service to the role of women in disasters or any place else. And it was because they just discounted gender and women's rights completely. You know, I think where we are now is that they realize that they can't discount it completely. And there's a kind of a stage that is, it's a work in progress, you know. But the fact that they are at least saying those things means that they know they need to say those things. And now what we need to do is make it real, you know, translate that lip service into priorities and into policy. And, you know, that's one of the things that Madre does is while we're working so closely with women at the community level, we're also working in international policymaking arenas to make sure that the voices of women who live and work in communities are really heard so that international policies are relevant to them and are accountable to them.
How open do you think the U.S. is to this kind of gender analysis?
You know, the U.S. government agencies are not monolithic. I think that USAID is better positioned than it has been at any point in the past to be an organization that is willing to listen and to learn. Having said that, we continue to be critical of a number of policies. Right now, one of the things that's happening in Haiti is that aid is being delivered through food drops, you know, dropping big packages of food out of helicopters. And I don't know if anybody who's listening has seen any footage of that on television, but one of the things that's really clear if you watch it happening is that food drops get food aid into the hands of people who can shove their way to the front of the line the fastest. They don't necessarily get food into the hands of people who need it the most, who are often the people who can't walk to the distribution point, who can't jostle themselves through a crowd because they're holding a baby. You know, it's kind of a crass example, but it's a really concrete example and really true, I think, that is a way of delivering food aid that does not take gender into account. And it really disadvantages women, and in a situation where people are literally haven't eaten for weeks now, some people, it really endangers women.
And do you think that the kinds of human rights violations that women have been subjected to in Haiti, sexual trafficking, sex tourism, domestic violence, do you think all these things worsen after a disaster?
Yes, but not all of a piece. Different things happen at different stages. One of the things that we often see in disasters is that even before the rescue teams get there, the traffickers get there. We saw that in the tsunami, and we're very much on alert for that in Haiti. And trafficking of women, also of children and babies who are labeled as orphans when they may or may not be orphans, and quickly trafficked out of the country into, you know, sort of shady adoption situations, is another big concern in Haiti and anywhere where there's that, you know, that level of chaos. One of the things that I want to share with people, though, is that, you know, in the days right after the earthquake, I kept getting calls from journalists wanting me to tell them stories about mass rapes happening in Haiti in the days right after the earthquake. And I was kind of taken aback. And then I realized, as, you know, the third and fourth and fifth calls were coming in asking me to share these stories, that this was a storyline that journalists here were creating and wanted me to supply them, you know, with the narrative. It really wasn't a story that we were hearing from women in Haiti. And in fact, there is usually not a rise in that kind of sort of arbitrary and large-scale sexual violence in the aftermath of a disaster. Quite the contrary. And the most striking thing about the behavior of people in Haiti in the wake of this earthquake has been the incredible levels of solidarity and dignity that we've seen among people, which is, you know, flies in the face of all the stories we're hearing here about the looting and the rampaging and this and that. Those stories are really, many of them, fabrications, and many of them just misuse of the word looting, for example, to describe somebody who's, you know, going into a destroyed store to haul out water for children who are dehydrating in the street. So going back to the issue of violence against women, you know, it is something that we're very much on alert about. The phenomenon of domestic violence against women, violence within families, does invariably rise after disasters like this. It doesn't happen in the days and weeks after. It usually happens in the months and the year following. And that's because domestic violence is an outcome, in a lot of instances, of men being very, very stressed, because of displacement, because of poverty, because of their authority in the family being dislocated. So I do anticipate that in Haiti, and that has nothing to do with Haiti. That, unfortunately, happens everywhere that we see humanitarian disasters.
Is there anything else you might like to tell our audience?
Sure. I mean, I'll just share one short story, which is that, you know, I was on the phone earlier with one of the nurses that we're working with in Haiti. She's moving back and forth across the border between Dominican Republic and Haiti, and part of setting up field hospitals and giving emergency care to people. And we were able to send in another truckload of supplies that they were distributing. And she told me how much it means to people there to get their hands on these supplies and to know that this is the culmination of the efforts of so many people in the U.S. and elsewhere, but this was supplies that people here had donated, you know, raised money for us to buy. And, you know, I mean, it's medical supplies that obviously first and foremost are saving people's lives, but the fact that they know that those supplies are from money that was raised from so many individual people, she said, really means the world to them, and that it really lets them know that people are, you know, are standing with them in this very, very difficult time. So it's life-saving, but it's also, you know, helping people there to muster the strength that they're going to need for this incredible job of rebuilding their country.
It helps a lot to know that other people really care. It kind of helps you muster your courage.
Right.
Yifat, it's really been a pleasure talking to you, and thank you so much for coming on our show and telling us about what's happening in Haiti at the moment.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to an interview with Yifat Suskind, Policy and Communications Director of MADRE, an international women's human rights organization that partners with local women's and communities organizations all over the world. MADRE is currently providing disaster relief in Haiti using a women's rights and gender focus to assist some of the tens of thousands of pregnant women in Haiti, and to provide a communications channel to monitor sex and baby traffickers, and to monitor other women's rights violations in relief efforts. For more information, go to www.madre.org.